This is the rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. Coming up on the show, Gainesville organizations are trying to make life a little bit easier for single moms. And later, Manoush Zomorodi of NPR's TED Radio Hour wrote a book. It's all about how digital devices are impacting your physical health in unexpected ways. But first, multiple wildfires have been burning for months in north central Florida, and unfortunately, they show no signs of stopping. Earlier this week, I spoke with Ludi Bond, a spokesperson for the Florida Forest Service, about what people can expect as wildfire season continues across the state. Can you pull back the curtain a little bit on some of the Florida Forest Service's operations? We've heard a lot about these technical terms like long-range spotting or mop-up, things like that. But in layman's terms, can you explain how the Florida Forest Service goes about fighting a brush fire or a wildfire?
In the South, specifically Florida, since we have no topography to speak of, our primary firefighting tool are bulldozers. And they plow a line around the fire down to bare dirt, because dirt won't burn. So when we talk about containment lines, that's what the rangers are doing. They're getting in the dozer, they're plowing those lines, and the hope is that it will stop the fire. But as we saw just earlier this week with the fire we've had here just east of Gainesville, and really the Cow Creek Fire, Levy County last week, and all the fires we've been to have had spotting behavior. Fire doesn't just travel by ground, it can travel by air. So what happens when that fire spots over your containment line? Well, then you have to go with a brush truck and extinguish it, or you might have to divert a dozer to go plow a line around it. In the meantime, do we need air resources? Is this fire moving so fast and so hot that if we call in some helicopters to drop water, where do we need that? A fire is not considered completely controlled until it is dead out. Now, is it controlled within the containment lines? Sure. Is there still fire activity, though, within the perimeter of that fire? It's still burning vegetation. Stumps are burning. We got hot ash pockets. That fire is not dead out and still needs to be monitored until there's no visible smoke, no visible flame.
How is the state managing its resources, and where is the money to fight these fires coming from?
So the Florida Forest Service has been so fortunate in the last few years, and really we've been able to increase our fleet of dozers, our fleet of helicopters, and our fleet of drones. So it's interesting to note that the Florida Forest Service has the second largest fleet of wildland firefighting aircraft in the nation, second to Cal Fire. We're working with World War II era helicopters, which isn't really, in the long term, that's unsafe because everything kind of, you know, wears out after a while. So we were doing the best we could with what we had. But now we've got new helicopters, some new aircraft, and the fleet of drones. We have 40 drones. So we do feel like with our federal partners, with our county fire departments, and the municipal fire departments throughout Florida, as well as the volunteer fire departments, what a great resource that we are all very well equipped and trained and coordinated to respond to these fires very heavy with a lot of resources very quickly.
When the smoke from a wildfire travels, sometimes it doesn't smell how you would expect a wildfire to smell. Why potentially would a wildfire that is presumably burning brush, like trees, dirt, leaves, why would that have a different smell? And should people be worried about any potential health impacts?
Wherever there's fire, there's smoke. And the particulates are very, very small with smoke. And they certainly can create some health issues, especially those people that have respiratory issues. So depending on the vegetation that's burning, can determine the smell that you're experiencing. As fire moves through the various layers of vegetation underground, you have layers of duff, which is much more light and airy decaying vegetation. Then you have peat, and then you have muck. That can go 20, 30, 50 feet underground. What is happening with these fires that we're having in the Southeast right now, right, and specifically here in Florida, is fire is getting into areas that should be wet typically they are wet, and they're not right now. Swamps, prairies, lake beds. So the fire is moving across the surface, and then it begins to burrow and tunnel underground. And as long as it have oxygen and vegetation to feed on, that fire will continue to grow and expand, and it can pop up in another area. In my experience, since I've been with this position for 25 years with the Florida Forest Service, we have seen fires burn for months, even over a year, because the heat is still underground and it's still feeding on vegetation.
This year's hurricane season is predicted to be a lower than average hurricane season. So do you have concerns about the future of the wildfire season in Florida?
Absolutely. We're absolutely concerned. But see, just to your point, just what you mentioned, we know what the predictions are. We know what's coming, so we can prepare accordingly. Sometimes we refer to wildfire season won't end until we get a named storm. So a season ending storm. So that could be a tropical depression. That could be a hurricane. But when you get that steady saturating rain for several days, that typically will extinguish whatever is still ignited.
That was Ludi Bond, a spokesperson for the Florida Forest Service, speaking about Florida's unusually high wildfire activity. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. Florida is home to roughly 44 native snakes. Which of them is the longest? Is it A, the eastern indigo snake, B, the eastern diamondback rattlesnake, or C, the Burmese python? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. Being a single mother can be difficult, but several organizations in Gainesville are trying to make their work a little bit easier. WUFT's Kira Carl looked into the life of one single mom to find out how these organizations are helping.
Over a slice of chocolate cake at her dining room table, Maria Barrington tells me about her life.
Ooh. It's a challenge. It's not saying it's a bad challenge, it's just a challenge. There's never a dull moment being a parent.
She has a 16-year-old daughter who doesn't live with her. As for Maria's life, well, she'll tell you it's not the one you'd expect of a high school and college graduate.
You find yourself kind of tearing up sometimes when you're really trying to get stuff done, and then there's a door that closes.
And single mothers have it harder than most groups. That's what Cheryl Carlton, an economist at Villanova, told me.
They have so many things that are working against them that make it much more difficult.
Those are things like childcare, low minimum wages, and fewer benefits. But places like St. Francis House, a Gainesville homeless shelter, is trying to help women like Maria Barrington. I meet Lori Schiffbauer as people drop off donations. She's a joyful woman in her 60s with purple and gray hair. She claps her hands together as she speaks to me to emphasize her point.
And that's what most of the women who come through the program are like. You know, something really off the wall or very unexpected has happened.
Lori says she knows it's hard, but women shouldn't be afraid to ask for assistance. She still remembers a time when she found one woman crying in the shelter after a church group came in.
And my baby girl, what is wrong? She goes, this is my church, and now they all know I'm homeless. I said, you should be proud. You're not in the car. You're not walking on the streets. You did what you needed to do, take care of your children. You should be proud.
For Maria Barrington, St. Francis House is more than just a place to stay. She says it helps her feel supported.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be a mind struggle. Emotions, everything, you're gonna find yourself crying a lot, but you gotta stay positive.
And there's another place that's trying to help people like Maria. It's called Gianna's Place, and it helps those who are seeking a higher education. I meet Cindy Hooker, their director.
Hello.
Just as I'm walking up to the front door. She says the mission is simple.
We don't think any woman should ever have to choose between her baby and her education. We want them to be able to complete that education so that they have a better life for themselves and for their baby.
We have our washer and dryer here.
She shows me around the one-floor house. She was a single mother herself once and remembers the humiliation of using food stamps for the first time.
That's the only time that I ever felt really judged, and people were really mean and rude.
Now she's making sure that doesn't happen to other women. Because of places like St. Francis House and Gianna's Place, Maria Barrington is hopeful for the future of her and her daughter.
Coming here has actually opened doors that I was actually trying to figure out how to get to on my own. But it's a lot better at dealing with things here in the shelter than it was on my own, because I don't have to worry about trying to cheer myself up on days that I just can't find that happy thought.
Single mothers like Maria can reach out to either St. Francis House or Gianna's Place for somewhere to stay until they figure out their footing in the next chapter of their lives. For WUFT News, I'm Kira Carl.
This story was produced last year, and St. Francis House actually closed its doors earlier this year. Executive Director Lori Schiffbauer said rising costs for food and utilities strained the shelter's budget, while donations remained steady. For more in-depth look at what St. Francis House's closure means for the community, visit our website at WUFT.org. This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up on the show, we spoke to the host of NPR's TED Radio Hour about her new book. It's about how digital devices are impacting our physical health. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and while you may be aware of the effects of digital devices on our mental health, a new book explores the impact on our physical health. WUFT's Glenn Richards recently spoke with NPR's TED Radio Hour host Manoush Zomorodi, award-winning journalist and author of Bored and Brilliant about the attention economy. Her new book is called Body Electric: The Hidden Health Costs of the Digital Age and New Science to Reclaim Your Well-Being. Let's listen to their interview.
This is a great book, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, oh, no, that's me.
No. Yeah, that I feel like it's all of us, right? Yeah. So for me, it was that feeling at the end of the day where I'd be sitting and working on my laptop. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I'd close my laptop and you'd think I would have enough energy to like run out into the world and celebrate that the day was done. But this sense of being drained and tired and sort of wired and tired and having just enough energy to slide over to the couch and then maybe check my phone and maybe watch some Netflix. We've heard about the mental health effects of being online too much or social media, but to me, this felt very physical.
You teamed up with Keith Diaz at Columbia and came up with the Body Electric Project.
We had 20,000 people try to actually integrate these movement breaks into their lives, because even though Keith had sort of found the answer that movement breaks were key to breaking this cycle, which was leading to chronic health disease and also to our sense of exhaustion, he was like, I don't know if people can actually integrate these interruptions into their lives, because we have built a world based on sitting and looking at screens. So we decided to ask people, and listeners could sign up to try to take movement breaks, because we wanted to test feasibility, the effects, and how did they do it. And what we found was that people who committed to taking movement breaks, 82% of them were able to stick with it for 2 weeks. 80% of them actually enjoyed all the interruptions. Fatigue, on average, was lowered by 25%. And actually, what was surprising was that all those interruptions did not make people less productive. In fact, productivity actually increased. So what we heard from people was that they would take their break and they would come back to their desks feeling refreshed, ready to focus again, like they could concentrate. Also, we heard aches and pains that lifted, back aches, shoulder aches. We heard also that people just had more positivity. Their mood stayed more stable. And I feel like, you know, you're in the news business. It's rough out there right now. And if we could bring people just a little bit of joy and feel a little bit better in their bodies, that is a win.
I'm going to have my wife read this when I'm done because she works from home mm-hmm. and she knows she needs to take breaks and she's got breaks that are scheduled and she just blows right past them.
Yeah.
You know, and very often by the end of the day, she's like, yeah, I didn't have lunch. I didn't have time.
Tell her that she can make it super easy. Just try to take 3 5-minute breaks starting out. See how she feels before she takes the break. Then she can walk down the driveway to get the mail. She can walk around the dining room table. She can even just shuffle back and forth while she's on a call. All of that is acceptable. And then after the 5 minutes are up, she should just check in again with how she feels. Well, that's Keys calls this the somatic check, and it builds the body's ability to enjoy feeling movement and to know when they feel good. And when we feel good about something, what do we want to do? We want to do it again.
That was NPR's TED Radio Hour host Manoush Zomorodi speaking with WUFT's Glenn Richards about her new book, Body Electric, The Hidden Health Costs of the Digital Age and New Science to Reclaim Your Well-Being. Hear their full conversation and watch her TED Talk, Sitting All Day Is Killing You, Here's What to Do About It, at WUFT.org. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. If you missed the first half of the show, no worries. You can always listen to previous episodes at our website, wuft.org/The Rundown. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. As a reminder, our trivia question this week, Florida is home to roughly 44 native snakes. Which of them is the longest? Is it A, the eastern indigo snake, B, the eastern diamondback rattlesnake, or C, the Burmese python? The answer's coming up at the end of the show. That's after a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. This weekend is Mother's Day, in case you forgot. So WUFT's Genesis Trujillo walked around the campus at the University of Florida to ask students, what's the best piece of advice your mom gave you that you actually used?
My name is Ava Manalo. I think one of the best pieces of advice my mom has given me is to prioritize yourself and your education and your own well-being before anything else, because at the end of the day, you have to get yourself through, and then everything on the side falls to the side as long as you make sure you set up a good future for yourself. And honestly, being in college, that's just always hitting for me.
My name is Kamal El Baba. So starting in my sophomore year here at the University of Florida, I'd say my mom always told me to put myself out there. I had a lot of fun in high school, and I think I expected the fun to find me here at university, but sometimes you got to go and find the fun by reaching out, meeting new people. And so every time I do meet new people, I try to put my hand out, introduce myself, and that's reaped some really good benefits this year. I've made a lot of good friends.
My name is Rachel Owens. Don't ever log into your bank on public Wi-Fi or say anything about your card information because my card information got stolen and it's been months.
My name is Susie Mendez. To always be humble above everything. I feel like just being humble gets you very far in life, and being kind. I think no matter how high up you are in life and no matter what job position you are, you always just have to remember where you came from and always just remember who helped you get there.
My name is Zachary Spangler. Yeah, so something my mom has always said, and actually it was less that she even said it, it was more that she did it, it was just that rules don't exist. And what I mean by that is you can go so much further by trying to make a personal connection with somebody versus just stopping yourself at whatever the rule says it is. And it's happened so much, especially at college, where you get in a situation and you're like, okay, maybe my grade's not where it needs to be at in a class, and you feel like you've done everything, but literally sending an email, sitting down with a professor, going to office hours, making that personal connection, showing them your face, it means something. At the end of the day, we're all humans, we're all people trying to help everybody out. So if you just say oh, the rule is that this is my grade, and you never try to go that extra mile, you're gonna be held back from a lot of opportunities.
My name is Layla Hudson. Really, this week in general, I've been overwhelmed having all finals and work and moving out. And my mom told me this week that you don't have to handle it all at the same time. All you have to do is focus on one little thing at a time, and eventually you'll get there.
My name is Clayson Pham. it's okay to fail. That's what my mom told me. Like, you know, with, like, finals coming up and everything, and, like, it's okay to just, like, take a breather. And even if you, like, you try your best and you fail, like, it's just another day. That's, she's always said that. Sometimes success isn't everything.
My name is Kirsten High. I would say, well, it seems cliche, but follow your dreams and be happy.
Those were students at the University of Florida answering the question, what's the best piece of advice your mom gave you that you actually used? Hey, this Mother's Day is Sunday, and it's not too late to order those flowers. This story was produced by Genesis Trujillo and Olivia Gilbert. You may remember last week when we told you about a group of Gainesville students heading to an international robotics competition. Well, we have an update. They won an award there. The team of five Fraser School students, known as the Turbo Gatorbots, were one of 160 teams to compete. They were one of five teams to receive what's known as the Innovative Project Finalist Award. One of the team's coaches is Eric Dujing. He says he's proud of the kids' work ethic.
The kids actually learn the skill to identify a real-world problem, solve the problem, and have this broader impact, and also all the rich abilities or skills, etc.
The team competed in the first LEGO League Challenge. Their goal was to make archaeology less destructive, so they built a robotic prototype using various sensors and AI. It can find artifacts in the ground, 3D model them, and dig them up. According to Dujing, the kids hope to replicate their success when they compete in the high school division next year. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. The team that made this show possible this week includes Dave Barriswain, Dana Hill, Kira Carl, Glenn Richards, Genesis Trujillo, Olivia Gilbert, and Tess Lippincott. Our trivia question this week was, Florida is home to roughly 44 native snakes. Which of them is the longest? Is it A, the eastern indigo snake, B, the eastern diamondback rattlesnake, or C, the Burmese python? The answer, A, the eastern indigo snake. Did I trick you with the Burmese python fake out? This snake is not only the longest in Florida, but also in the entire United States. It can get up to almost 9 feet long, although most stay between 5 to 7 feet. Eastern indigo snakes are non-venomous and non-aggressive, and they have a glossy blue-black color with a red chin. They're also endangered and protected in Florida. That's it for the Rundown. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. We'll be right back.